Hey friends, my name is Inka Dawson and I'm the host of the John Mark Comer Teachings Podcast. Before we jump in, we'd love your help. We put together a quick 2-minute listener survey to learn more about you and how we can make this podcast even better in 2025. If you're hearing this, the survey is still live. Head to practiceintheway.org/podcast survey. It's super short and your feedback means a lot. Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Rule of Life podcast from Practicing the Way. In each season, we explore an ancient practice from the way of Jesus and its relevance for the modern era. This is Season 8, Service.
Well, welcome to episode 2 of the Rule of Life podcast, where we are talking all about the ancient spiritual practice of service. Last episode, we talked all about the foundation and motivation of the practice of service, which is love, loving others by meeting practical needs. And the main question that we're going to pivot into today, and actually over the course of these next 2 episodes, is the question of how. How do we serve in the way of Jesus? And just to start the conversation, I'd love for you to talk to us about how service is like the other practices, and then how is it different from the other practices?
Service is like any other spiritual practice in that we have to just start where we are and just get going. In the same way that if someone was, you know, saying, I want to begin to pray, but I'm not sure how.
Sure.
You wouldn't say, well, here, memorize the Psalms and then try to pray like that. You say, well, just start talking to God.
Good.
And just be honest with him. So in the same way, service, just we deepen the practice by doing the practice. It's different, though, in that Jesus prescribes hiddenness to service uniquely. The only other spiritual practice that's like this is prayer, where he says, go into your closet, in one teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. But it was in particular response to a Pharisaical way of prayer that was common at his time. But with service, Jesus prescribes hiddenness generally and says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. So Jesus is saying, don't serve in front of other people for the sake of flattery, and try to even hide service from yourself, because you can even feed your own ego with this spiritual practice uniquely. So it seems that service is particularly susceptible to be engaged in for what we might call false motives, but I think Jesus makes an important distinction.
Okay.
It's not a false motive, it's an expiring reward or a false reward. Because Jesus, at the end of that same teaching on hiddenness, he talks about rewards in heaven. Or allowing the Father to reward you. So he's saying there's a way we can go about serving that we actually get a cheap counterfeit reward for ourselves. And there's a way we can go about serving where the Father will reward us, which I don't think means like a greater number on my bank account in heaven. We don't know for sure what Jesus is talking about, but it seems to me that what he means is the spiritual fruit for your soul you're longing for. The Father wants to give that to you. But if you trade that for if you eat fast food on the way to the fine dining restaurant, then you won't be hungry to eat the real meal that you're being served.
So the question that we're really asking here then is there a practice from the way of Jesus that gets at, that impacts us at the motivational level?
Being honest, most people like to help people, mostly because of satisfaction. They love how it feels to help people.
Self-gratification, if that's your only goal, it's probably not a great motivation.
Some not so good reasons for helping others is when it's for appearances rather than because it's actually where the heart is.
Especially with like social media, TikTok culture these days, people posting. I think that's not a reason why you should be helping people.
I mean, not everyone has to know about the stuff that you do for other people. You're not supposed to do things for a reputation or for an image.
The hidden acts of giving her the best ones. You shouldn't need the reward or the acknowledgement.
I think doing things in secret, like donating or even just lending a helping hand in secret, it allows you to know that this is the type of person you are. And when the opportunity comes, this is what you do.
So the practice for influencing us at the motivational level is to do good in hidden places. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to talk a bit about what do we mean by hiddenness?
I think when we talk about hiddenness, what we really mean is serving in a way that helps me truly forget myself. Mm-hmm. And that means I can't be remembering me
right. In
any way while doing it. And so the temptation to remember oneself would be different for everyone
based
on personality structure and a whole bunch of other motivations beneath that. But what I would say is for some people that would be the temptation to post what you're doing on social media. For other people, it would be the temptation to focus on your own feeling of self-congratulation. Mm-hmm. For some people, it would be the temptation to live into the future. What am I going to do after this? How am I fitting this in? Mm-hmm. All those sorts of things. For some people, it would actually be the temptation to overanalyze the purity of my motivation. Like, am I okay? Am I doing this for all the right reasons? Mm-hmm. So all of those are ways that I'm remembering me, that I'm turning my attention toward myself. And what Jesus seems to be saying is serve in such a way that you're just giving yourself. You're making your life a gift to this person or to these people for this period of time. That's what the practice is the practice of dying to oneself.
You know, just asking for a friend here, that last bit, that last bit where you're like the person who is constantly concerned with the purity of their motivation.
Yes.
Any thoughts around, like, what do you suggest they do then to practice hiddenness? Or, any practical thoughts on what does it look like to get out of that place and move in the practice?
Yeah, so I would say, let's start with what it doesn't mean.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't mean you stop serving until your motives are pure.
That's good.
Your motives will not be purified by not serving. In the same way that we wouldn't counsel someone to stop reading scripture until you really believe that God isn't grading your spiritual piety based on how many days a week you cracked the Bible.
Yeah.
You would say, well, if you're struggling with that, with making this about God's condemnation or approval of you, the problem isn't the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible can actually correct the problem if you encounter the compassion of God through the scripture. So don't take that away.
Yeah.
So in the same way, service can actually help correct that problem. So don't not serve. What does it mean? I would say it means invite the Spirit to purify your heart.
Yeah.
Beyond what you are capable of doing.
Mm.
This is a really important thing that you're hitting on that applies to all spiritual formation and every spiritual practice, is you eventually are going to hit the glass ceiling of what you are capable of.
Correct.
In the formation of your own soul.
Mm-hmm.
And it is at that point that spiritual formation happens at greatest depth.
Mm.
If you submit yourself to the Spirit and you trust God to say, do within me by your grace what I cannot seem to do within myself by my practice.
Mm.
So I keep on practicing, but I invite the Spirit to go beyond my practice to a greater depth within me. So I would say it means, in the most practical language, every time you're on your way to that environment to serve, say, God, here's the truth.
Yeah.
My motives are not entirely pure.
Mm.
My ego is very alive.
Yeah.
Right now as I'm going to serve, and my thoughts are frequently turning inward.
Yeah.
I pray that you know, if I'm going to be there for an hour, would you give me a couple minutes tonight when I forget myself and I get to taste service your way by the power of your spirit? And then maybe we can build from there.
Yeah.
It just looks like that.
It's not just about serving in hidden places. It's also about serving in familiar places. So talk to us a little bit about why we need both.
Oh, we need both because we're called to be a servant everywhere we go. Jesus went to the street corner in the leper colony, and Jesus washed his own disciples' feet around his own dinner table.
Yes.
You know, like, so if it's Jesus we're following, then we follow him everywhere he goes to live how he lives in those places and to be formed by him there.
Mm.
Also, it's both because when Jesus, you know, in John 15, classic passage about remaining in him everywhere we go, the vine and the branches, it's the last time of his life, and he says to his disciples, I've told you this so that my joy may be in you. And your joy may be complete.
Yes.
And this is why the end goal of all spiritual formation and the end result of service is joy. This is the reward the Father is giving us, is joy, because joy is found in forgetting oneself.
Mm.
Like, if you think... We often trade joy for pleasure, which is what I can orchestrate, right?
Yep.
I can tell you what would bring me pleasure. It's like a dinner, according to my imagination. It's a, you know, things like that. But that isn't joy.
Hmm.
Joy is like happens upon you. Like joy is like a deer in the woods.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, I can go on a hike. I can't go find a deer.
Yeah.
You know, but a deer can happen upon me and I can stop and take it in. So any experience of awe, beautiful sunset, the delight of watching your children play on a summer evening, whatever it may be, you lose yourself. You forget yourself in that moment of awe.
Yeah.
Because you are you're freed from the prison of thinking about yourself for a while. This is what service is teaching us, informing us to do, is forget ourselves. So as I go to intentional environments of service, the hope is that I become the sort of person that engages in my own home, among my own family, at my workplace, in this self-forgetful way.
Yeah.
Why? So I can bring the kingdom? No, actually, that will happen.
Yeah.
But so that His joy might be in me, and my joy might be complete.
So good. Because I think there's a misconception that we can often slip into when we think of service. We think that it's something that we do apart from our families or those that we're in close relationship with.
Yeah.
But what I'm hearing you say is this is about it becoming a lifestyle, which is going to require... We practice this in hiddenness and in the familiar places.
Absolutely. It's the same as we were talking about in the last episode, how we have this framework of the presence of God being among God's people, where he is found.
Yep.
But there's even more promises about his presence being among the needs of others.
Yeah.
And we also have this misconception of service means going outside of my normal rhythms and relationships, which I would say... Service can mean that, but service is more about a way of being. It's a way of showing up to another person.
Mm, so good. Let's talk about this idea of feeling good when we serve. This is something that showed up in the interviews that we did with people on the streets of Vancouver, BC. What would be your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I would simply say it doesn't have to hurt for it to be following Jesus.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have this misconception that spiritual formation must be the same as getting a six pack, which I don't know,
Me neither.
I would assume hurts, like that's the pathway there.
Yeah.
But that isn't the case. Like, spiritual formation should be making us increasingly more free and joyful. And so a lot of times being formed into the image of Jesus will feel great.
Yeah.
And that's okay. We don't serve to get a feeling of personal gratification, but feeling personal gratification because I lost myself in loving service to another is not a deterrent.
Right. That
doesn't mean
thing.
I did something wrong.
Yeah.
That's like a great thing to walk away with. And and so I think there's, for some reason, I think because it's possible to only serve in search of gratification, that it's kind of gotten all lumped together. And I would say, hey, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's not the purpose of service. But that definitely isn't a negative thing that we need to avoid. It's definitely not proof that we weren't serving correctly.
The service practice is designed to be run in your church, small group, or community. It combines teaching, conversation, and exercises, all designed to help orient our lives outward in serving love in the way Jesus modeled for us. Over four sessions, the service practice helps your community take simple steps towards service in the ordinary environments and unexpected encounters of everyday life. The service practice is completely free thanks to the generosity of monthly givers in the circle and other givers. Available now at practicingtheway.org.
Next up, we have a conversation between Tyler and my friend Jonathan Tremaine Thomas. Jonathan Tremaine, also known as JT, is an activist, pastor, and preacher. As the grandnephew of the legendary civil rights activist and artist, Dr. Nina Simone, JT carries forward her legacy of justice work through Civil Righteousness, an organization he founded that is dedicated to racial justice and reconciliation through Jesus. And JT, you get this beautiful combination of someone who lives Jesus's mission with Jesus's heart. Here's his conversation with Tyler.
All right, JT Thomas, it is great to chat with you today, my brother.
I'm so glad to be here.
Obviously, we're talking about service, but I want to talk specifically about the hiddenness that Jesus prescribes that we carry as we serve. So, you know, one of the interesting things, if you read the Sermon on the Mount, that I want to ask you about is Jesus is teaching on all these different spiritual practices, you know, like reading of scripture, generosity, forgiveness and confession. And he's always raising the bar from the Torah and saying, don't just fulfill the law, go beyond it to the level of your heart. But then when he does so with service, He does that exact same thing, following the pattern, but he says, also, you might want to serve in secret, but in some way or another, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. So why do you think Jesus sets aside service to my neighbor in need as something that should be kept out of the light of day from the public eye?
I really love that question, and I love this topic. I think it's because he's a humble king. I think that Jesus is so in tune with the human condition and the tendency of our own hearts. He knows that we are made for worship, but we're not made to receive worship. And we crave it. And so there's something in us that I believe that that he's after in our hearts, the kingdom way, which is that the Father is glorified. Everything Jesus did, he says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And so there's something of in his humanity, he goes the distance in showing us a way that protects us from ourselves, from our human pride. And, you know, I think that the truth of the kingdom, as opposed to the kingdom of darkness, the truth of the kingdom of light is that everything that's hidden will be exposed, right? By the kingdom of light. But in the kingdom of darkness, you know, Satan is very much a performer and an exploiter even. And so there's this sense in our unredeemed nature to show, you know, to be flashy, to be to draw attention to either ourselves or to the flesh. And Jesus ushers in just another way. that is so opposite our natural wirings.
Yeah, that makes me think of another place in the Gospels when you talk about Jesus ushering in another way. You know, in John's Gospel, we see Jesus washing his disciples' feet as his life is nearing an end. And it's like a lived parable. And then he gets uncommonly clear for Jesus and says, "Do you realize what I've done? Here's why I've done what I've done. It's so that you will do for one another what I've just done for you." And he's turning, like he's saying, the way of his kingdom is that the one who's greatest is the one who serves. And then he even in some of the synoptic gospels, he points out the ruling structures that are around them and says, look, there's a benefactor model going on here where the person with the most power is the one everyone's coming to. In my kingdom, the one with the most power is the one who seems to be the least. Mm-hmm. So if you want to carry spiritual power, make yourself a servant. I wonder if you'd share a little bit about what Jesus is getting at there and what it might mean for me to live, because no matter what nation people listen to this from, it's some nation where the one with the most power is receiving the most honor. That's all of our governing structures, all of our office org charts, all of our social atmospheres, everything is ordered this way. So how do we actually participate with the order of the kingdom of God in a world that's discipling us the other way all the time?
Well, I think we have to think about even the idea of power and the systems of the world that we live in, where power is this oppressive thing. It's, you know, it can be oppressive. It's not all power is oppressive, but when we think about the social structure and even the order that Jesus steps into, the Jews are looking for a deliverer from Roman oppression. And they think they're looking for this Messiah to come as a military leader who's going to wield this sword and lead this great militant conquest for the liberation of the Jewish people. And Jesus is saying, actually, there's a power at work here that's more powerful than military or even governmental structure, and it's actually the structures of the human heart. It's the neurology. It's like the worldview. It's this pathology even that has passed down from Adam through the bloodline. And we could change the social order and the social structure, but if we don't deal with the condition of the heart, then we've not advanced. We've not made any progress. And so Jesus comes and he says, actually, I'm going to subvert the kingdoms of this world through the leaven of the kingdom of heaven at the heart level. So he says, I'm actually more concerned with what's empowering your thoughts with your iniquity. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna confront systems and the order and the structure of the way you love and the way you live. And that is going to establish moral power. That's going to establish a spiritual power that's actually not just temporal to change and subvert kingdoms on earth, but it's eternal because it's now releasing the kingdom of heaven.
You know, something that was coming to mind for me as I was listening to you is how I think service is different than many other spiritual practices, because we engage most spiritual practices asking the question, what is this supposed to do to me? You know, like, how is the reading of scripture supposed to shape my imagination over time? How is prayer supposed to reshape me from the inside out? How is generosity supposed to change the way I relate, not just to my bank account, but to all of my possessions and all that I have, things like that. But most people engage service thinking, what is this supposed to do to you? You know, like, how am I helping you? So I wonder if you would speak a little bit as someone who, you know, leads an organization that is deeply rooted in service and justice, that is working with different groups and volunteers and everything like that. When Jesus prescribes service, you know, toward those as close to us as like the people we're breaking bread with around the table, wash their feet, and as far as like the notorious sinners and tax collectors that no one else will touch, what's that supposed to do to me as I go about serving others over time? How should I engage the practice of service in a way that says, I want to be formed by this over a lifetime?
Jesus begins his ministry. It's the first real descriptions of his public ministry. He's in the synagogue at first, and then it says he actually casts the demon out in the synagogue, then leaves the synagogue, and it says he goes to a home. He goes into a home, and suddenly he's doing, which even that, when we're talking about hiddenness, is really interesting, because we you would think that, oh, we had this church service and people were healed and delivered and amazing things happened. We need a bigger venue. But Jesus says, no, actually, I need a smaller venue. I'm going to home. Yeah. So he goes.
It's the same thing after the feeding of the 5,000. You know, where he works like this massive miracle among thousands. And then everyone's like, where is he? And he's gone off on a mountain by himself. He sent the disciples away. Then he's like taking a stroll on the waves, you know, but they can't find him till they locate him on the other side of the lake. Jesus seems to always, and it even says in John's version of that story, they wanted to make him king, but he wouldn't let them.
Right.
So he's fleeing flattery. Every step of the word.
He's running away. He's not posting on socials, hey guys, guess what just happened last night? Look at this awesome stuff. He's like, actually, no, I've got to run into the wilderness. I need to go and talk to the Father. Like he's going back into that place.
Or go to a home, like you're saying.
To a home. And I say this because ultimately we're being transformed into his image. And to know the Father is to love the Father. And obedience is a sign of love. And one of the things, it all comes down to love. Are we learning to love? Like, we can learn about Jesus, but he is the personification of love. He is love manifested in its fullness on the earth. And so, when I'm serving the houseless person, or when I'm serving my enemy, I'm being invited into a greater measure of love and living love, like loving Jesus. And so, you know, Jesus even said, you've heard it said, hate your enemies, but anybody can do that. A new command I give to you, love your enemies. And so I think that in service, you know, we can think we're going to serve others, but oftentimes I think I personally have been more transformed by people that I thought God was sending me to minister to, and they ended up ministering to me.
Man, do you mind if I ask you a couple personal questions about this?
Sure.
I'm thinking about those two environments of Jesus retreating to be in secret with the Father, and Jesus going to homes. And, you know, you're someone who leads a well-known national or international mission, you know, or justice organization and civil righteousness. Your voice is one that is respected and invited into conversations and various streams of the church all over the world. And so you seem like someone who would be uniquely susceptible to practicing your righteousness in front of others. And that's one of the dangers of influence in the name of Jesus, right? So there's a privilege and a gift and a unique danger. So I think the question I want to ask you is, how do you practice hiddenness? And I don't want you to share anything that you shouldn't share, but I'm curious, are there things between you and God that are just between you and God that you're like, I'm never going to share this. I'm never going to. And how do you discern how to incorporate that into your life?
You know, it's funny. I think about this a lot because I was recently reminded, I actually still have Facebook. I don't use it very much, but I still have Facebook. And these memories popped up from about 15 years ago this summer. And I just thought, wow, how different my life was then. No one knew who I was. I didn't get any invitations to speak anywhere, to talk about anything, but my day-to-day life was following Jesus wherever he told me to go in the streets. So I would spend hours in prayer and I would wait kind of for a direction from the Lord. I had this one summer where I would just wake up and I would worship and pray and read scripture and just kind of say, Lord, what do you want me to do today? And he began to give me coordinates around the city, and it turned into street corners with drug dealers or under a bridge and overpass with some houseless teenagers or, you know, whatever the adventure was. And it was so sweet. It was such an intense and amazing time with the Lord. And the revelation of Jesus that I received in that season is a well that I'm still drawing from in this season of my life. And I was recently just thinking, it started in the streets and on sidewalks, and then it moved from there to stages, and then from stages to classrooms as more venues opened up to share and to teach and to impart. And even from there to stadiums. So I've seen this trajectory from hiddenness on the sidewalks and the streets and under the bridges in the grass to telling the stories and filling the venues and the conferences and things. And I actually started to grieve and I said, Lord, oh my goodness, this is dangerous. When I move to where I'm on a stage more than I'm on the street, it's actually like my heart is in danger. So I've resolved, I said, Lord, even this year, this is a new, it's funny you asked this question because this is a new resolution. I said, Lord, I'm going to make intentional choices over the next year to go back to the streets. I want to spend more time practicing this in hiddenness than talking about it in public. But I say that to say that, yes, there are things that I have in my relationship with Jesus and my journey with Jesus, practices that I'm not supposed to share because it's unique, it's private, it's beautiful, it's intimacy with Jesus. And when I'm entrusted with those secrets, you know, he shares his secrets with his friends. It's not like, hey, you have special revelation. I don't have special revelation, but I do have a special relationship. And I think we all are invited into the covenantal, beautiful family of God, the community and the corporate pursuit with God. But then there's also that unique, intimate, individual reality of fellowship with him, where he'll show us things, he'll speak to us, he'll invite us into things. And he says, you know, this is not for anyone else, but just for you.
That's a really helpful practical metric just here. Like, okay, in your vocational life, you're saying this has to weigh more than that. And I feel like while we can't prescribe what hiddenness looks like for anyone, it has to fit the shape of your life, the limitations and opportunities of your life. And I want to ask you about your your home life as well, because I know your wife and your daughter. And I imagine it's a unique challenge to lead an organization that is built on serving the least in these, the least of these, the down and out, like you said, like street corners with drug dealers and highway overpasses with the homeless. And I'm curious, how do you think about bringing service home, like to the level of the people that I interact with most frequently? You know, the people that we love the most definitely get the worst of us. That's like a given. They get us unfiltered in all of our dysfunction. We can't present with them. But hopefully they get the best of us too. And so I'm curious, how do you think about service with the people that know you best?
In my younger years, you know, being really zealous, being kind of a go hard or go home kind of guy, like, hey, I'll pour it all out. I'll just spend it all on the streets. And coming home and giving my wife fumes. What I learned was that in loving her well, first of all, as a husband, I'm learning to love her as Christ loves the church and gives up himself for her. And so with my wife serving for her, when we were serving so many people that are constantly in crisis, constantly in need, you know, one of the things that she needs from me is a protection of time and safety and the dishes to be unloaded from the dishwasher, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I began to see, oh, it's a spiritual act for me to, it's just as spiritual for me to come home and say, honey, we're gonna go on a bike ride and go get custard. And we're not gonna go to the prayer meeting that our ministry is hosting, we're gonna actually skip out on this massive outreach event that we've done every year, specifically just so you and I can, you know, go kayaking there. And I realized that is holy unto the Lord. And then being willing to, as joy is built at home and as I'm kind of feeding that tank of love in the household, what naturally becomes an overflow is us serving together as a family. You know, we're, after a while, she's like, you know what? I haven't been to the outreach that we do every week in a long time. Can I come this week? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Mm. You know? And so I think I've learned part of serving and specifically leading families, leading those who are closest to us, is understanding how we can serve in kind of building up the joy tank that brings them into a place where they can sustain a life of being poured out.
Yeah, I think what I hear you saying is that what's unique about service to those we're closest with is that it requires a much higher degree of awareness of self and awareness of that other.
Right.
We often show up to service to a people group or a cause because there is a felt need that is leading the way. It has been expressed and someone has created a way for those of plenty to meet the felt need of those who lack. Yeah. But at home, we have to kind of discover those felt needs, and they're much more subtle, and there's trial and error involved in attuning myself to what does bring joy to the other. And right. It's probably not what brings joy to me. When the stars align, you're in business, but it's often right. not. But I also hear you saying, hey, I had to recognize that when my tank is empty, I'm not showing up as who I intend to be. And right. so I have to then limit myself for the sake of love, which I think is really helpful on the other end of the spectrum, like what is required of me as I go about my life outside of relationship to those who are closest to me, so that I actually have the energy to attune to what brings the other joy and to choose it when I'm with them.
One of the questions I think about around this topic is, how do you discern when something ought to be hidden versus modeled? You know, if I could even pick on in the service practice session, you tell an incredible story about taking your boys to serve in Portland at Night Strike. And it is a beautiful and it's a compelling story. And the question that comes up for me is like, so yeah, how do you go about discerning when to just keep that tucked away and hidden versus to model it?
So for me, here's what I think about. Number one, in sharing that story, I had already forfeited hiddenness by taking my children to Night Strike. Mm-hmm. I had already decided this environment for me, which was once a place of hiddenness that I went to personally, mm-hmm. I'm choosing to turn into an environment where my primary vocation mm-hmm. is as father discipling my children.
Yeah.
Because my children are young enough that if we are there, they're getting more of my attention than anyone else.
Yeah.
Just because of my unique love for them and because of their unique neediness of me. Secondly, I would say scripture teaches that those who teach, like myself, don't need greater honor because I'm already regularly in a position where I am being honored by others through the exercise of the natural outcome of the gift of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say is that means that it's really, really important for me to have environments where I am following Jesus that are not benefiting me in any way. No one else is watching me. No one will ever hear this story. This is not about, this isn't a service project that my church is doing, because even that, in a roundabout way, is serving my thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think it's exponentially important for me to have environments where I'm an anonymous disciple of Jesus. So what I would say is a question I regularly ask myself is, what between me and God is just between me and God?
Mm.
And so I actually personally think of the practice of hiddenness as a practice of secrecy because those we're closest with, we have secrets with.
Yeah.
Like you have secrets with your husband, not like things you're whispering to each other that he's not allowed to tell, but there's lots of things that are between the two of you that you would never disclose to someone else.
Yeah.
And if the closest relationship in my life is my creator, then I should be keeping secrets with him, things that are just between us for the sake of our intimacy and my formation. So I just try to make sure there's always an environment or a practice or environments and practices in my life that are kept in that category.
That's
How
so
about
good.
You? What is your own practice of hiddenness?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about which three things could I share about that I've done in hiddenness that would be really impressive for you right now. But I think that that would go against what we're trying to accomplish here. But what comes to mind is, you know, I noticed just a few weeks ago, I was going about my day and I felt a prompting from the Spirit. I live in New York City. I'm surrounded by need, but I just felt a prompting to do something particular that day. Fast forward, my husband gets home from work and we're kind of catching up on the day. How was your day? And I was so struck by the thing that was happening in my own mind and heart of like, I really wanted to tell him about that thing that I did earlier in the day.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt this awareness. I didn't share it, but I felt so aware of like, but I want to tell him, you know? And I just find it so interesting that like, you know, I'm sure lots of people listening aren't necessarily being tempted with sharing on a platform, maybe in a Sunday context. We have lots of other platforms that we can share. But I even just think about, you know, how we share in conversation with even the people that are closest to us. And so I think for me, it's been really helpful to practice hiddenness. And what I'm noticing is how it frees me from the approval or the disapproval of other people. Yeah. It's only in hiddenness where I get to see, you know, who I really am in a sense, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's been really helpful in those ways.
Yeah, I really align with that. A question I try to ask myself is, what am I hoping to work into conversation this evening?
Yeah.
Like people
yeah.
come over my, because I will often realize, oh, there's something that I'm waiting for the right moment yeah. to naturally bring up. But the truth is, this is quite a premeditated thing I'm hoping to talk about.
I feel
at some
so
point.
Seen right now.
And it's usually somehow shining a yeah. spotlight on me that I want to be yeah. shown to me. It's like, oh, yeah. so funny. This was brought up. And so I just try to be introspective about that. And yeah. now we're back to the necessity of self-reflection and right. prayer and how that pairs with the practice of service.
Yeah, and the opportunity in that is that maybe this is too strong of a way to say it, but it's in a way only in hiddenness where who God says I am becomes enough. Mm-hmm. You know, when I choose to withhold things about what I've done or whatever, that I can actually receive and rest in the identity, you know, the value, et cetera, that he speaks over me. It's a way of practicing that, of saying, you know, who you say I am is enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, this, it makes me think a little bit more about rewards, which yeah. we were talking about before. Yeah. And I think that the Father's rewards we were defining before as like the joy that he wants to give yeah. us, the virtue, the freedom. But the Father's rewards are also relational.
Yes.
And so I think of, you know, someone whose story I've told a lot, so I feel freedom to bring it up. Felix, mm-hmm. who is someone I met initially through service, who did over 20 years in prison, has fought narcotics addiction, has come from a background that is so much more difficult than anything I've ever had to overcome. Mm. But over 4 years of close friendship, where we went from, you know, service provider, service recipient, to mentor, mentee, to now friends.
Yeah.
I have received so much more relational reward from him than I've ever given to him. And my children are growing up in an environment where they are constantly relating to Uncle Felix, who's even wow. gone on vacation with us and stuff. Mm-hmm. And occasionally they'll ask me questions like, what did Felix do that he ended up in prison and things like that? Because they're putting these dots together of the world not being so simple
yeah.
and redemption being possible for anyone.
So good.
And Felix is modeling that for them in a way that I could never teach them. Mm-hmm. And that's the Father's reward
wow.
in my life that I'm beholding under my own roof.
Practicing the Way is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by The Circle and other givers. The Circle is a group of people from all over the world who believe deeply in the work of spiritual formation and discipleship and give monthly to see formation integrated into the church at large. I'm Andy from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I'm a part of this community. I give to Practicing the Way so that more people can experience joy in following the beautiful way of Jesus. To join myself and others in The Circle or to share a one-time gift, please visit practicingtheway.org/give.
Now we want to introduce you to Steph. More than 10 years ago, Steph said yes to nanny a young boy in foster care in order to support a couple in her community group. Little did she know that this commitment would be the first step to completely transforming how she spent her time outside of her 9-to-5 job as a hairdresser. This is her story of faithfully serving children in foster care in the Portland area and how Jesus has used this hidden work to change her.
My name is Steph, and I volunteer with a nonprofit called Foster Parents Night Out. We offer respite to families that are in foster care. So I started nannying kids that were in foster care based on the needs of someone in my community. So we had a couple that had become foster parents for a little boy and were also pregnant at the time. And so they had two kids that they needed care for, and took another call from friends that were opening up their home to two kids that were in foster care. And they said, can you do two more? And I said, yes. At any given time, we'd get a call that was like, what about one more? Could you do one more? What about for a week? A three-year-old for a week? What about, could we do a baby? What if we added a baby? And so then by the end, there were six different kids in care that I was nannying. And, you know, with foster care, it's you don't know the length that these kids are going to be with us. For some, it led to adoption. And for others, we would have them with us for a couple weeks. Some we would have for a few months. So the same community group that was focused on fostering, we stumbled upon Foster Parents Night Out, and decided to put one on for ourselves. And so Foster Parents Night Out is a nonprofit centered around creating monthly rhythms of respite for families that are in foster care. So they're able to drop off foster, bio, adopted, the whole house comes. They drop off their kids for 4 hours where we've planned fun activities, themed nights, special guests, and create a culture for these kids where they want to come to our event. I have worn many hats at Foster Parents Night Out. It started as a group planning everything together, classroom lead, program design, running themes, to now I'm the site coordinator. I've been doing it for 12 years total, and this is all volunteer. One of the stories that comes out is of a family where there's a couple kids. They started out in our 4 and 5 year old class, and they were tough. Running off tables, jumping into piles of things, classic kid stuff. One of the kids in this family, he was a runner. So he was constantly, every month, testing us. And we had assigned a leader to be his one-on-one. You're like, you're gonna run around with this kid every night. This is your job. And he would sprint up and down the stairs, up and down the stairs. He would run into a classroom, make eye contact, and just be like, all right, is this it? Is this the moment that you like get angry at me and freak out? Is this it? And then the volunteer would be like, nope, I could go all night. And it really climaxed in this child running into a room and ripping it to shreds, like posters off the wall, toys flung around. And our volunteers paused and asked for the spirit to come. They're like, please, we need your peace in this room. And he stopped. He looked at them and slowly started putting the room back together. It's like, all right, I'm ready to go to my class now. Like these behaviors, these rhythms where he's testing and saying like, when does my behavior, when is who I am so offensive that you're gonna leave? And he's asking with his actions, are you gonna stay this time? And in the weeks preceding that, he wasn't all of a sudden the best kid that's ever lived. Like it was consistently testing and trying. But now that they're in middle school, I was talking to them on the side of the basketball court and we were reminiscing, going over memories. Do you remember when we were this age? Do you remember when this? And they're like, why did you never kick us out? And the real answer is that behind the scenes, I've been fighting for them to stay. I had volunteers threaten to leave. I've had many conversations about should these kids even be here because they're so tough to be around. And I was able to say to them in this moment, because I have fought for you to stay here. I fought for you to stay. And it matters to me that you're here because we want you here. And they were like, what? That's crazy. They're like, what? Oh, huh. That's it. Simple revelation. Done. They moved. They're like, should we play basketball? Like, it was that quick. But I was like, this is the work. Like, this is, they had no idea that I had been fighting for them behind the scenes. They had no idea. Everything is centered and like underbellied by a sense of identity in belonging to the family of followers of Jesus. And so when I look at these kids and look at these nights that we do, the reason that I have energy, the reason that I have desire and even excitement around stepping into these spaces is because I know that as we're putting this on, we are modeling for them a sense of adoption, a sense of love and belonging, and we get to live out what it is to follow Jesus. And though that is our core motivation, is because we love Jesus and we've been adopted into his family, we bring that sense of adoption to all the work that we do. And so we get to say, we've been adopted and brought into the fold. And so you are, of course, brought into our fold. Rough edges and all, like scary tantrums and all, like mismatched socks and all, you are brought into the fold. And we get to do that. And it's beautiful work. It's the best. I want them in my family. Like, come, join. When it comes to hiddenness in the foster care system, it's something we battle with because by nature, the work that we do has to be hidden. Kids can't have their photos taken, names can't be shared. We're trying to be discreet, not just because we're like so humble, but because it's for safety. Like actually we cannot talk about our kids. The location of the event that we hold, Foster Parents Night Out, can't be shared. It is by nature very hidden. And the last thing that we want to do is like talk about kids in their worst, like in these dark places, and talk about them in places that they haven't even decided they want to talk about. So we keep that kind of, all the stories, the things about what's going on behind the scenes at Foster Parents Night Out hidden. Doing service that is like so hidden, we can't take pictures, talk about it really beyond surface level, has been so growing for me in a place that I'm naturally bent towards wanting to be clapped for, wanting that like approval. I don't get it. And it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, being able to serve in a way that maybe like once a year I get on stage and ask for volunteers. And I'm like, we're doing summer camp every month. It's so fun. But like, that's not what it is. That part gets to stay between me and these kids and the program and with God, to be able to be doing work that I actually don't really get to talk about that much has been so special and really worked on shaping my heart towards where I feel like God has called me from the beginning, of being an advocate, of being a caretaker. And like, I think the goodness that's come out of this like hidden work, specifically between me and God, has been, it feels so special and unique to have hidden things, especially in this culture in 2025 in Portland with the internet, where you're oversharing, like you know everything about everyone. It feels very exposed. And even especially in the church and what we're doing, sometimes sharing that stuff feels very, it feels exposed to me. I feel exposed in it. And being able to have this work that's been going on, this deep transformational work through the act of service in a place that is not public, has been so tender and special and reshaping of who I am and my identity over time. And knowing that there's things that are hidden between me and God that aren't like the bad, scary hidden that needs to be worked out in confession, but the good, sweet hidden that keeps things special, that are only found in relationship over time. I mean, my relationship with God is built around these sweet hidden things that I know he's working out with me. My like closest, dearest friends know, but it's not public. It's not for everyone. It's not on a stage, but it's happening in rhythms every month and in between for 12 years. This work is, it's not that you get paid in such different ways. Like the currency of service is one that is paid out in the long run. There's maybe like little like quick fixes of like, wow, that parent said, thank you so much. Like we just had a quiet car for the first time in a month. But then it looks like the long stretching consistency of, I knew this kid when they were little bitty, like 4 years old, and now I get to speak truth to them and show up in a way that a lot of people don't get to do. The repayment of my service is in the intangible. It's in the transformational work that has happened to me over years without noticing, honestly.
So something that we say often is, you know, we don't want to just talk about these things. We want to put them into practice.
Yeah.
And so the exercise for this week is inviting people to practice one hidden act of service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to just get your thoughts on that. Anything that you think would be helpful for us to keep in mind as we exercise this week?
Yeah, very practically. I wouldn't say think small. That's kind of what we talked about a week ago. But staying in that same vein, I would say think sustainable.
Okay.
So if what immediately leaps to mind doesn't feel like something you could continually do on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. I would say go back to just a hidden act of service that you think I could repeat this week over week. That doesn't mean that you will.
Yeah.
It's just that unless often what we do with service is we just fit it into our already full lives mm-hmm. without taking anything out.
Yep.
And we don't need to start thinking about subtraction and putting something in rhythmically yet.
Yeah.
But don't start so aspirational mm-hmm. that isn't even a possibility. Mm. So think what would be sustainable and then do it in a way that for you is self-forgetful.
Yeah.
Whatever that means for you, whether it's not trumpeting it to anyone else conversationally or mm-hmm. whether it's something about your heart posture as you go in or whether it's about going ahead and serving even though you know that your ego's alive and mm-hmm. still noisy and everything as you go.
Yeah, that's something I'm definitely taking with me from this episode. And I think it's helpful, you know, to as you go into the exercise this week, pay attention to the parts of your heart that want to be seen mm-hmm. and have a conversation with God about it. Like, bring that to him and allow him to free you from the approval or disapproval of others.
Yes.
Well, thanks for being with us for episode 2 of the service series. We hope to serve you and many others through this practice. So it would mean so much if you would tell a friend or a family member about this podcast and subscribe to be in the loop for what's coming up next. For our next episode, we'll be continuing to explore this question of how do we serve in the way of Jesus, this time talking about the topic of availability and how service can grow in our lives through the combination of our intentional plans and our interruptible posture. Now let us leave you with this blessing from our service practice, inspired by the words of Saint Teresa of Avila. Christ has no body but yours. No hands, no feet on earth, but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks with compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. So may you, like Christ, go now not to be served, but to serve.
Thanks again for listening. Quick reminder about our listener survey. It takes just 2 minutes and your input really helps us shape the future of the podcast. You can find it at practicingtheway.org/podcast survey. Thanks.